The nation is mourning the loss of 19 children and two teachers who were killed in the shooting yesterday at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. It follows a long string of school shootings, including the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, nearly a decade ago. President Biden called on lawmakers to, quote, stand up to the gun lobby, end quote, and take action to prevent these tragedies.
And don't tell me we can't have an impact on this carnage. I spent my career as a senator and a vice president working to pass common sense gun laws. We can and won't prevent every tragedy, but we know they work and have positive impact. When we passed the assault weapons ban, mass shootings went down. When the law expired, mass shootings tripled. The idea that an 18-year-old kid can walk into a gun store and buy two assault weapons is just wrong.
More details are still coming out about what led up to the shooting in Uvalde. Our guest today has reported extensively on survivors of previous school shootings and the impact of this gun violence on children and their families. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How has the news of this latest shooting affected you? If you're a parent, do you worry about your child's safety at school? Do you try to talk about it with your kids? If so, how? What questions do you have about the impacts of school shootings? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. John Woodrow Cox is an enterprise reporter at The Washington Post, author of the book Children Under Fire, An American Crisis. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You talked and you wrote about your conversations with survivors of some of those past shootings, John, and their reactions to that news out of Uvalde yesterday. What kind of things did you hear from, you know, people who had survived these shootings as children and families who lost their kids in those past shootings?
Yeah, I mean, there was certainly a sense of shock. There was anger. There was a deep sadness, but largely there was not surprise. You know, this is a thing that they knew could happen again and inevitably would. And here we are, right? I mean, I think that these are people who, the people I interviewed specifically for this story today, are people who've fought, you know, for change. They have worked hard so that these things don't happen again, but they've seen very little change at the federal level. They, you know, 18-year-olds can still walk into a store and buy assault weapons, as President Biden pointed out. So that sort of sweeping change that that they hoped for but never came, they knew that it would result in a day like we had yesterday.
You've talked to people who have survived mass shootings. What did you learn, and not just high-profile ones, ones we probably never even read about as they happened, what did you learn about the impact on kids after they've gone through something like this and try to later have a normal life?
It's often hard to predict, you know, how a child will react, but in my experience, children have dealt with devastating trauma, lingering trauma. A group of children I wrote about in the book in South Carolina, they're still dealing with it 6 years later. They're still dealing with what they saw that day. And that was a school shooting that took one life and that lasted 12 seconds. And, you know, in one little girl's case, she has probably been to 8 or 9 different therapists since then. She's been diagnosed with debilitating PTSD. She can't go to school anymore. She's on antipsychotics and antidepressants. She has harmed herself, you know, picking at her elbow and pulling at her eyelashes and banging her head against the wall. And you know, a lot of that stems from fear, but a lot of it also stems from guilt. Kids often come away from these events with a feeling of a real guilt that they should have done something to stop it, or that they should have helped their friend who died. You know, and a lot of these kids are not legally considered victims of anything. They're not, because they weren't physically harmed, but they absolutely are victims. And we know, too, that a huge number of children have been through school shootings in this country. And we have a database at the Post that tracks that very thing. And it dates all the way back to Columbine. In that period, since Columbine, at least 311,000 students have been exposed to gun violence on their campuses. It's a huge number, and a meaningful percentage of those kids are still struggling today.
Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut delivered a speech in the Senate urging fellow lawmakers to do something about these shootings and talked some about the experience of the kids in his own state.
In Sandy Hook Elementary School, after those kids came back into those classrooms, they had to adopt a practice in which there would be a safe word that the kids would say if they started to get thoughts in their brain about what they saw that day, if they started to get nightmares during the day, reliving stepping over their classmates' bodies as they tried to flee the school. In one classroom, that word was monkey. And over and over and over through the day, kids would stand up and yell, monkey, and a teacher or a paraprofessional would have to go over to that kid, take them out of the classroom, talk to them about what they had seen, work them through their issues. Sandy Hook will never, ever be the same. This community in Texas will never, ever be the same.
What have you seen, John, about how schools like now, Uvalde in Texas, the kids are going to go back to school someday. The teachers are going to go back to school someday. How do they bring them back?
It's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly hard. You know, kids will be triggered by all sorts of things. Loud noises when they go back. They'll be triggered by sights that they've seen. They'll be triggered by smells. Getting kids to a point where they can actually be educated again, where they can learn, where they can figure out how to put numbers together and how to read is going to take a long time. Much of the transition back will just be trying to make them comfortable because some kids will be okay and then some kids won't. And when a kid has an outburst, it's going to affect other children too. So, there is often in the aftermath of these things, we see things like Parkland Strong or Sandy Hook Strong, and that's a noble thing. But also, sometimes it can imply that it's time to get over it. It's time to move on. And that is simply not how grief works. It's not how trauma works. These can take months and years for people to not just get back to some version of normal, but to actually be able to function at all. So that's what they're facing. They're facing a really long and difficult road back. And what they need are lots of therapists, lots of adults in their lives who love them, overwhelming support. And it can't end after 3 or 6 months. It needs to be a long-term commitment.
We're talking to John Woodrow Cox, reporter at the Washington Post, author of the book Children Under Fire, An American Crisis, looking at the impact of school shootings like the one in Uvalde, Texas yesterday on survivors, on parents of kids lost in those attacks. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, maybe your experiences. Let's bring on a caller now. Blake is with us in Madison. Blake, hi.
Hi. So I'm a person of color living in Madison. I'm 30 years old. I'm calling in because I want to say if people want change, they're going to have to do it themselves. The last 20 years of politics after Columbine have shown we can't expect progress at the state or federal level. 2 years after George Floyd, we don't have real police reform. Next year, we might see the end of abortion, gay marriage, and racial marriage in Wisconsin if a Republican governor is elected. I won't hold my breath on gun control or, gun laws being put into effect. People need to find their own outlet to enact change in their community. There's the Liberal Gun Club if people want safety, education, and outreach for parents in their community. There's NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There's food banks. There's Boys and Girls Club. There's local politicians that we can talk to about affordable housing and living wages, health care.
Blake, I got you. A lot there. But, John, Blake's initial, it sounded like, I think, frustration with lack of change on issues related to guns, especially with the survivors, and the parents you've talked to. Are they sharing that sense of frustration?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Deep sense of frustration. And, because it's preventable. These aren't natural disasters. It's not a hurricane that showed up in Texas and killed 19 children. These are events that we can stop from happening. And we know they don't have to happen because they don't happen in any other developed nation. Children are not being routinely shot to death in schools in England and Canada and Australia. And when those events have occurred in those places, there has been rapid change, rapid reform. So it's not something that is inevitable, right? We could choose to do something differently. And that's what these activists, that's what these families understand, is that This is a choice that our society is making, that we're allowing these to happen over and over and over again.
We're talking about the aftermath of the elementary school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, with Washington Post reporter John Woodrow Cox. He's talked to survivors and family members of past school shootings about their reactions, the long-term impact of these attacks. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How would you like to see these school shootings addressed? Have you lived through something like this yourself? 300,000 Americans plus have had an event like this in their school. Are you one of them? What did it change for you or maybe for a loved one? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. We're picking up our conversation with Washington Post reporter John Woodrow Cox, author of the book Children Under Fire, An American Crisis. He's with us today looking at the impacts of school shootings like the one yesterday at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. He has spoken with survivors and parents from past school shootings. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions, maybe your experiences. If you've been in a school as a teacher, a student in the last bunch of years, what are things like? 800-642-1234 when it comes to safety and precautions. Let's go back to your calls now. Sandra is with us in Milwaukee. Sandra, hi.
Hello. I am listening to this as a former educator in a couple of different schools and a teacher training faculty member. In one of the schools I taught at for a long time, I never thought that the students were at risk, even though there was a shooting nearby and my son was in that school. My principal let me go to get him and remove him from the school. The school was unlocked when there was someone with a gun traveling from school to school. The second school that I was in, another school that I was in, every single day I thought the children were at risk because of the very casual way the possibility of them being hurt was treated. To have a counselor be a part-time counselor and part-time security guard is completely unreasonable. One school that I volunteered in, I will tell you, they had at every entrance, this was a large Midwestern city with plenty of guns, at every entrance, they had a metal detector. These metal detectors were not expensive, but you couldn't get into that school with a large umbrella without
Sandra,
them going off.
Thanks for the call. John, Sandra, seeing a variety of approaches to security at schools, talking to people who've worked on these issues and survived these shootings, do you have thoughts on what people are saying about various security measures?
Well, I can speak to that. I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions out there about, security measures being able to ensure that shootings don't happen. And it's just not based on reality. There have been a great many shootings that have occurred at schools where there were metal detectors. There have been shootings at schools where there were multiple armed resource officers. There have been shootings at really every sort of school with any type of security that you can imagine. There is no sure way to guarantee that a child will not get a gun into a school or that an adult won't get a gun into a school. It's not to say that those security measures haven't helped in certain cases, or that things like training, that those can't be effective. We do know there are examples, but they are not guarantees of safety by any stretch, because we know there have been shootings in all those environments. You know, what we do know is that if the one thing that had changed after Columbine is that adults with guns locked up their firearms and did not allow those firearms to fall into the hands of children, if that was the only change that we made, well more than half of the school shootings in America would not have happened since Columbine. They just wouldn't have happened if we just made that one simple change. So, you know, the one commonality in every single school shooting is the gun. School shooting cannot happen without the gun. And there is no good excuse for a child getting access to a gun and shooting up a school. Certainly, in this case, the shooter bought the gun legally. But in many cases, that's not the case. Children get guns from home, they get guns from friends, they get guns in ways that they shouldn't. And seldom are the negligent gun owners held accountable.
Thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. Talking to John Woodrow Cox, author of the book Children Under Fire, An American Crisis, looking at what happens in the aftermath of school shootings like the one at an elementary school yesterday in Uvalde, Texas. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Aaron is with us in Madison. Aaron, hi.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call, and great to hear John on the line here. But we talk about what's been done, after these school shootings happen, and it's clear that it's basically nothing at this point. And I think, I really hope that folks here in Wisconsin understand that the decisions that we make as far as who we put in office does have an impact on kids in Texas. And how we can have a direct impact is by making sure that we don't have buffoons in office that are only concerned with themselves and their own power, like Ron Johnson, and get the right folks in there that'll actually solve these problems and help to move us forward.
Aaron, thanks for the call. John, do you have thoughts on the politics that have emerged just in the last day over this?
Yeah, I mean, your caller is not wrong. There is this sense that Americans are deeply divided on gun reform, gun safety reform, gun policy, and it is not true. Polls consistently show that 90% plus of Americans support things like universal background checks. There's widespread support for a lot of other gun policies as well. There's a perception that, America is 50-50 on guns. That's not true. Where there is deep division is in the Senate on Capitol Hill. There are a handful of Americans in the Senate deciding for all Americans what our gun policies will be. And much of that is certainly driven by financial interest. It's driven by the influence of the gun lobby. Because no one could argue that the Senate is voting precisely according to what Americans want. They're not. There's just been a complete unwillingness among Republican senators to consider any really gun reform. And that was certainly true after Sandy Hook. And I don't see a reason why it would be different today.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll talk more about the politics of gun control here on Central Time coming up on Friday afternoon. John, what kind of support do people need now? The parents who just waited to find out whether they lost a child yesterday, the kids who survived, and as you say, are going to deal with that survivor guilt that they probably don't even understand. What kind of resources, in your experience, do they need the most right now?
They need a lot of opportunity to seek counseling and therapy. I mean, it's a simple thing, but it is critically important. And what that means is, the state needs to fund, and nonprofits, whoever, needs to fund dozens of therapists to show up there, and not just, remotely. They need physically people who are there, and that costs money, and it's an investment, but that's what they need. They need that opportunity. Not everybody will be ready right away, and some people won't ever be ready, but they need the opportunity to seek that sort of help if they need it. And they need, too, is they need patience. They need the rest of the world, their family and friends who aren't there, and the other communities around them to be patient, because there is a very sort of American ideal that, in 6 months, let's get over this and move on. And that is just not the way it works for a great many people.
And John, if I may ask, on a personal level, you, I think, tweeted recently, you've been covering this issue almost exclusively between your reporting and your book, this issue of, what happens to people after school shootings for 5 years now. There's enough of a beat here that it occupies your time. When you see those first headlines break, the first things come up on social media that there's another one, what goes through your mind?
I mean, I feel sick. I felt sick yesterday. It's gutting because I know what those people are headed toward. I know all the pain that they're going to endure and not just this week, but for years, for the rest of their lives. You know, these people will never be who they were, ever. They can't be. It's impossible because someone is gone, a child is gone, and it is. It's incredibly painful, and it's deeply frustrating because I feel, you know, also that it's not. It doesn't have to be this way. America is making a choice, and I hope and pray that we'll make a different choice.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's John Woodrow Cox, enterprise reporter at the Washington Post, author of the book Children Under Fire, An American Crisis. He was with us today looking at the lasting impacts of school shootings like the one yesterday in Uvalde, Texas. You can keep following the latest news. We've got stories from NPR at WPR.org. And again, we'll talk more about the politics of gun violence, gun safety, and gun control. That'll be coming up Friday here on Central Time.